Shake, gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey, gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. Makingascene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
I've been traveling these roads far and wide. Been to Chi-Town when it's cold outside. Saw my people loving God and life. Saw my people loving God and life. From the cobble streets of New Orleans to the city lights of Paris sinks. From the sweltering heat of Mexico to the icy cold Alaska snow. These days my struggle's gonna find you. These days the blues are gonna touch your life. These moments are defining. Everything is worth fighting for. Everything is worth fighting for. Daddy sadly both have died. Left me feeling like giving up inside. Had to grab a good book, swallow my pride. Had to grab a good book, swallow my pride. Now if you see someone who needs a hand, give a dollar. Something better for all men. It's the only way to be that bridge for something better for all men. Your life, these moments are defining. Everything is worth fighting for. Everything is worth fighting for. These days, my struggle's gonna find you. These days, the blues are gonna touch your life. These moments are defining. Everything is worth fighting for. is beautiful. She's come a long, long way to being free. Within her heart, she has carried oceans. She's come a long, long way to being free. In her lips you'll find nectar. In her arms you'll find sweet release. With one kiss, you'll completely surrender to her mystery. One day she becomes a mother, keeping watch to protect her child. My God, isn't it a wonder children survive all the crazy things in life? Oh, I am strong, as much as I am beautiful. I've come a long, long way to be free. Within my heart, I carry oceans. I've come a long, long way to be free. In my lips you'll find nectar. In my arms you'll find sweet, free face. With one kiss, you'll completely surrender to my mystery, to my mystery. One day I became a mother, keeping watch to protect my child. My God, isn't it a wonder children survive all the crazy things in life? Crazy things in life.
Mercedes Nicole from her brand new release, and we got Mercedes on the line right now. Hey, Mercedes, how are you today?
Hey, Richard, I'm doing good. Nice to connect with you.
Same here. Now, this is the first time you've been on our show, and we always like to start by giving our fans this opportunity to get to know you, get to know who you are, not only as an artist, but also as a person. So, give us the story of Mercedes Nicole.
I think that is so cool. I think that every vocalist wants, they want people to get to know them because we're people too. So, I grew up pretty poor. My family is from the Deep South, so Arkansas area. My father is from Kansas City, so grew up just as a poor kid, with parents who loved music. My mother loved the gospel, and my dad, he absolutely loved any pretty woman that was singing the blues or singing jazz. So grew up in a church kid, in the church, in My mother absolutely forbade us to listen to the blues because it was the devil's music, and she basically, I think, high in flight, just wanted to make sure I had a healthy perspective, you know, on life. And the blues talks about pain, and I think, you know, as now as a grown woman and a mother myself, I agree with her. I don't think that children should be exposed too early to certain types of blues because it might make them a little depressed. But the artists these days are so healthy. But I grew up, you know, singing gospel, and I always loved the blues, like my dad, listened to some of his records. And now I just absolutely just enjoy how authentic and real the blues are. So I'm a church kid who kind of thinks that the blues is a different kind of gospel, really. It really talks about the truth. So that's who I am. And the last, the first 10 years of my career, because I've been singing about 13 years now, I was focusing on jazz because that was more acceptable. And but if you listen to jazz now, there's nobody could put it in a box. You know, jazz has a touch of blues, and the blues has a touch of jazz, and music is just a bomb.
Oh yeah,
a bomb. Well, yeah, well, a bomb for everybody.
Yeah, I've always believed that, you know, that I always had a problem with the keeping the blues alive kind of slogan. Because I don't think we need to keep it alive. I think we need to allow it to live.
It is
a living, breathing art form that each generation has the responsibility to put their take on it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. It's really, I used to hear this saying that the blues is the truth. The blues is the truth, but music is truth in itself, and I think you're right. We just need to let it breathe and live like any other life form. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I remember when I was a kid, you know, I would go into my parents' room, and they had the little record player and the box of 45s. I'm an old guy. And I must have been about 7 years old when I was listening. And I put on this record of Bobby Darin's Distant Shores. And it just resonated. And I must have played the grooves off of that record. What was your earliest memory of a song or an artist that just you could kind of point to as your musical awakening?
I believe it was Ray Charles.
Nice, okay.
No, Ray Charles, because my mom, you know, funny, my mom really liked him, and it was like I got a woman way over town who was good to me. So, and that just tickled her, and so I think it was Ray Charles with his funny, his little quirky way of rocking back and forth. That really, and what really spoke to me was like, my mother, is that there was a woman, and she was a good woman, so that really connected with her, and I remember thinking, I want to be a good woman, that a man is singing about me one day, so I think it was that one.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about this new release. You know, every release has a story. It has a reason for its existence. What drove this into existence for you?
Well, I was warned and kind of steered toward going to college. And I was torn between being a nurse and a social worker. And I decided on doing social work because I hated the sight of blood. So I leaned towards social work. And for the last 20 years, actually, I've been working with homeless families, working with families across the country who displaced by Katrina and just having a hard time in life. And so the last five of these years, I've been working with the behavioral health, and those are the men and women you see on the streets who are just may not have the right clothes on. They may be talking to themselves. and too high a price to pay walking over encampments and stuff. I just think it's like that. I just needed to say, hey, we are our brother's keepers. Let's care for each other and let's care about those who are less fortunate. And so that is kind of like the message you get is like, I want you to have fun. I want you to escape. But I also want you to remind yourself and others that you know that even if people are less fortunate than you are, they are still, in some respects, our responsibility to even show kindness. Give a sandwich, give a dollar, give a hug, give a smile. Mm. So those are the reasons. Yeah.
Okay. Now, is there a particular track on this release that you feel kind of connects with you personally, that has a more personal story attached to it?
Oh my goodness. There's a couple of tracks. The Sky is Crying. The Sky is Crying. I've been a woman who fell in love with the wrong person from time to time. And when your heart is broken, you just feel that song, just, there's a sound of, out of that song where I didn't even realize was being recorded. I didn't plan on moaning, but I just let out a moan, and it just takes me to that pain. And I realized that every human being, at the time you think you're the only one. You may want to end your life, but the Sky is Crying really, really speaks to me because it reminds me of that pain. And then the miracle of the fact that I survived it again and I can smile again. I want to live. But when you're hurt, I believe the sky cries with you. Okay. You really do.
Now, do you ever sit down and any of the songs on this were written by you?
Yes, I have 7 tracks written by me. And, oh, you're talking about hard. I don't know what's harder, writing your own music or, you know, getting the courage to release your music. But yes, I have 7 tracks on here that were written by me.
Okay. When you sit down to begin that process of writing and you have that blank page in front of you, what's kind of that mechanism that you kind of go to that taps you into your muse, that gets things flowing?
Usually I'll be humming something, a phrase. Someone will say something to you, and you just kind of reflect on that phrase, and then a melody. I usually kind of like hum a song or plunk out something on the piano, and then I take a look at, like, what is it that I'm afraid to share? You know, what is it that I want to hide? What is it that, or what is it that I want to change in the world? And so whatever that question, however I answer that question, that's where I start with the lyrics. I'll write the lyrics and try to put the melody to that. So,
okay.
Yeah. Yep. Great question. My goodness.
Now, a lot of songwriters struggle with that moment where you have to put the pen down. And you got to allow the song to kind of move to its next phase of life. I always look at it as like raising a teenager. You get them to a certain point, and then you got to hand them the keys to the car and send them on their ways. Let life put their fingerprints on them. And the same with a song. You give it to the band. You give it to the producer. They put their fingerprints on it. And, of course, the song continues to evolve and continues to grow, but in different directions. You know, it grows in the studio. It even grows when you bring it out on the road. But you got to get to that point. What is your quantifier that you like to use to determine when a song is ready to move to that next phase of life?
When I have an emotional response to it. It's like I'll keep writing and it's like, no, I don't want to say that. Oh, that sounds arrogant. Oh, I don't want to say that. And then when I finish the lyrics on the song and I can, I'll record it on my little phone myself and play it back, or make my own MP3 and play it back. And I feel, I feel something. And then I said, okay, it's ready. It's ready for me to figure out what, you know, what the chords are going to be on there, figure out what the music's going to be. And I'll reach out to some of the guys I know who play. In fact, one of the songs here, well, the title track on it, Too High a Price to Pay, I was so close to it, Richard. I was just so close to it, and I couldn't tell if it was ready or if I was just too close to really hear it. So I asked the guys. We bought it, put that in the studio, and I bought the guys in the studio, and they kind of worked out some of the chords, and we played it back, and we made some changes in it, but I could tell that it was ready to let go. Because I really wanted to be moved, and I want people to be moved to take action as to in whatever level of action they wanted to take, and that would be even if it meant buying somebody lunch. And that's kind of where I landed, is when I felt like it captures what I want to say.
Okay. Now, of course, once you get a song recorded, the next stage is bringing it into the studio. And every artist has their way of capturing their sound, you know, and not only the sound that identifies you as an artist, but the sound that does justice to the song. When you get in that environment of the studio, what is your process that helps you get the sound you're looking for?
I take off my shoes. I take off my shoes in the recording booth, and I turn off the light or turn down the light, you know, however it is. You know, they have it lighted up in there. And in this particular studio, they have monitors so that the pianist can see you, the bass player, or you can see them. And I just turn off the monitors because that's distracting to me. And take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. And physically demand my body to relax, and then I open my mouth and lay down the first take. So,
okay, now let's talk about getting it out there. Once you get it recorded and you're ready to get it out, you got to get your team together, and you're working with Frank Rozak from Frank Rozak Promotions. Tell me a little bit about that relationship.
Frank is just—he just knows the business, and he wants good music, and he wants to. He doesn't work with everybody, and he decides on who he wants to work on with people, and just. Making sure that it's of quality. And so he's a promoter that understands music. He wants to hear quality music. Don't come to him with anything that's less than quality, or else he won't work with you. And so I just kind of, that kind of takes your anxiety away, is because you're working with somebody who understands the business. So that's him.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about the lineup on this. Who plays on this?
So, on the piano and on the Hammond B3 is Mark Seeley. And Jake Seeley, J-A-K-E, Jake Seeley. And Jake plays, in fact, in between the recording of this, he was in and out of Europe, so he's always playing somewhere in the world. So Jake Seeley on organ and piano. And then on the bass, we have Scotty Harris. And he's received numerous awards as one of the best blues bassists here in the Washington area. And then on drums, we have Andrew Courtier. And that's a French last name, but he's an award-winning drummer, which is amazing. He's amazing. He's so solid, like so solid that you could just like die out of happiness. But the man was amazing in the studio. Then on guitar, Rod Cook, who just absolutely is phenomenal. He's a phenomenal guitarist. plays all guitars, as I realized all guitars do, but he acoustic, electric, slide, everything. And Rod just, it was having an out-of-body experience. He was so good. And then tenor sax was Alexei Nikolaev. And Alexei plays a tenor saxophone, and he's just smooth. He will melt your troubles away. And then on the harmonica is Stacy Jones, who just plays everything. But I had her as a guest harp player on my project, and she just makes you grin from ear to ear because she knows how to use that harp. So those are the guys.
Okay. Now, I get into a lot of conversations on some of the hot button items or topics that are happening in the music industry. And I think one of the biggest hot topic items that I get into conversations about is the advent of artificial intelligence in the music industry. And I know we see all the headlines about how AI is, going to take over the creative world, and, how it can write songs and yada yada. And I think a lot of musicians miss the point that AI is not a creative force. It's really the ability to analyze a lot of data and to give us actionable items based on a very specific goal that we give it. And it's great for something like marketing the music, because if you look at Spotify, there's over 900 years of music on Spotify. We don't have enough lifetimes to listen to everything that's up there. And we need to get above that noise. We need to find our fan base, get the music to them effectively and efficiently without spending a lot of time on social media and creating content and all of that. And this is where I think AI really shines. What do you think AI's biggest influence is going to be on the music industry going forward?
Well, I think, first I want to say that I think you're absolutely right. I think that the proper way to use AI is to use it for information, data, seeing where to find the people, where to find people who are interested in your genre and who are interested in your style and what they like. You know, where are they, what they like, and how they can find you. So I think you're right about that. I don't, it's really different when it comes to jazz and blues. I'm not sure if AI has penetrated those genres as much. I'm thinking like the pop artists and stuff, they may have a better handle on AI in regards to, they may use it creatively. I don't know. I'm just trying to guess. But I think that, I don't think, AI does not have its own heart and soul. And so I think when it comes to particularly the blues and jazz, you want to feel something from the artist themselves. You don't really want a formula. Surprisingly, I heard someone like Gladys Knight or someone on the air saying that they were talking about their favorite, their most popular hits and stuff. And a couple of people had said in the R&B that they had, they used a formula, they put more drums or they put more horns or something. And they didn't predict, the artists themselves didn't like it. That was not their favorite song because they said it was artificially contrived. Whereas a lot of what we love about the blues and about jazz is that it's just like you can see organic, you see this organic unfolding. So I don't know, Richard, what's going to happen in the next 20 years, but I know the folks that love good music, like myself and you and those listening, they want some knit and grit and heart and soul in it, and they're not looking for perfection. They're looking for authenticity, and they want to feel moved. So the jury's still out, and we'll see what happens next.
Well, it's interesting because, I'm, like I said, I'm an older person, and I was around in the music industry when the drum machine came out. I had started recording back in those days. I've been a recording engineer since the mid-70s. And I remember when the drum machine came out. I remember when MIDI came out. The whole music industry was running around with their hair on fire. You know, that, you know, my God, we're going to take the soul out of music. We're going to, you know, take away jobs from musicians because, you know, a producer can use a sequencer and a synthesizer and build a whole song out of it. You know, and then later on, of course, then sampling came out. Oh, my God, they're sampling my, you know, my music. In fact, I used to manage a guy, Sam Bluesman Taylor, and his biggest claim is he had the most sampled song in hip-hop, the song Do It To You Satisfied.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, and, you know, he lived off of that royalties for, you know, for the rest of his days. But, you know, again, sampling took it, then we got into loops. And, you know, oh, my God, they're sampling a whole section of a song and using it in other songs and yada, yada, yada. And, it you know, in the beginning, it was abused, and then it became a tool. And I see AI on the creative end becoming a tool. Give you an example. Now, we all know what a DAW is, the digital audio workstation. That's the software that we use to record with. Well, it's starting to evolve now into what they call a GAW, or generative audio workstation. And you had mentioned earlier about how you sing the song into your phone and you record an MP3 and then you give it to the band or the guys or someone you know that we can play music to figure out the chords. Well, with these new recording software systems, you can put that into that software system and it will find the chords for you. It will play the drum part and play a bass line and play the chord progression, and you could say, make it a jazzy song, make it a bluesy song or whatever, and it will give you a framework to work within. So now you give it to the band and they have more of a feel for what you're looking for.
And exactly, you know,
yeah, and then you can bring it in, you can edit it and change it and do whatever you want to it. But you got that beginning. As someone who just sings, you can now have everything at your fingertips to create something right then and there. You know?
Yeah, that's exciting.
Oh, yeah. And again,
yeah, very exciting, yeah.
As long as we use it as tools and not a replacement, I think we're going to be just fine with it, you know?
I think you are you're ahead of your time. I really think you are. I think that as someone who's a subject matter expert, who's been an engineer and done a lot of things, that your voice carries a lot of weight. And I think using AI as a tool is exactly what it was purposed for, to be used as a tool. Like grammar check. What is that?
Right.
My spelling has gone to you know, it's just horrible now because I use spell check all the time in Grammarly, you know. So I think that I think we have enough music lovers in the world and people who just really, really want to hear great music, that if we keep AI as a tool and use it as a tool, we won't lose what we cherish, and that's some just authentic, truth-speaking great music. So I know that they will listen to you, because I'm listening to you.
Well, so, I mean, even when you go back to the drum machine and MIDI, I mean, that was abused back in the day in the 70s during the disco era. But the consumer eventually said, you know, I want more authenticity. I want more feeling in my music. Yeah. And they kind of rejected that approach to creating music and wanted that authenticity, which, you know, again, regulated those things into tools as opposed to replacements. So I think the consumer is going to do the same thing with AI. Initially, it's going to be a novelty. But then they're going to say, you know, it's just not right. We need more authenticity. And then it's going to regulate, you know, move itself into the realm of tool. And and creative people are going to be able to do things that they not normally would have been able to do. You know, and
that's right.
And those tools are going to be important. Now, you said you were an engineer at one point?
No, I'm not an engineer.
Oh, okay. Well, the other big topic that I get into is, you know, of course, we all know that streaming is the way the consumer now has embraced to consume music. Unfortunately, it caught us as independent artists pretty much with our pants down. It's not sustainable as a business model for the music industry. The big record companies went in, they bought shares into Spotify, they kind of, you know, carved out deals that gave them a lion's share of the pie, and the independent artist was given a more or less take it or leave it kind of mentality. And unfortunately, we can't walk away from Spotify right now because, you know, if you're touring, venues are looking at your Spotify stats to see how many people are listening to you. What are your monthly listeners? What is your, you know, how many of your tracks are, you know, above 1,000 streams, yada, yada, yada. So it's kind of ingrained itself in the industry. But let's face it, you know, we need to look towards the future to see where is it all going and where can we start to move our fan base so we can get a better shake on the industry. And I've been very interested in this whole world of a decentralized music industry using Web3 tools. To give you an example, there are streaming services that have been developed that use this software technology called the blockchain to as their engine. And what this blockchain does is that, give an example, there's a streaming service called Audius.co, and what it does is nobody can own it. It's only owned by the users who pay for it and the artists who put up their content. They are the owners of the service.
Okay.
And it's totally transparent. To give an example, you can't go to Spotify with an accountant and say, I want to audit your books to see if I'm getting what I'm deserved. I want to know if I'm getting my 10 cents. They'll laugh you out of the building, you know.
Or call the police.
Right. Yeah, and call the police. But with this new streaming service, you can go into this block where your music is sitting and look at it at any given time and see exactly how many streams you had, see exactly how much money you made at any time you want. And you can also put in these smart contracts that can regulate how people get paid. So let's say you had a co-writer. You get half, they get half. Soon as your music is accessed, it spits payments out to you and your co-writer. You don't have to do the accounting. You don't have to do anything. Okay? On top of that, you can now create shares in your songs and sell the shares to your fan base. So now your fans have an economic interest in your success. Okay? And again, once you put it in the smart contract, once your music is accessed, you get paid, your collaborator gets paid, and your investors get paid all at the same time. And again, you can go in and look and see it all the time. And these are some of the technologies that are happening now that if we took and adopted them and put them together in an ecosystem for the music industry, we can then foster a way to create a music industry middle class where music can be a chosen profession with a reasonable expectation that you can pay your bills and live a lifestyle that is, you know, equitable to any other middle class type of profession. What do you think of that as a potential for the future of the industry?
My goodness, I just think that's amazing. I think that the way you explained it, that would just open up, just a whole world of sustainable living. You know, that would just open up a whole world of people following after their passion, being able to feed their families, being able to, you know, educate themselves the way they want to and just do good toward their families and to the world. So that's just exciting. That's mind-boggling and wonderful excitement. That's how I feel about that.
And there's so much involved with it. I mean, you can create, let's say, I'm not going to mention him, but, there are certain politicians that made their own coins that they sell. An artist can do the same thing. You can make your own coins that you can sell to your fans. Now, those coins can then be used to have access to your own fan club, what they call a DAO, or Decentralized Autonomous Organization. And once they have access using these coins, they can use coins to buy merch, get access to behind-the-scenes footage, or you wrote a song on a napkin and you have a limited edition version of that on your site that they can download into their digital wallet as a collectible. There's a demo that you have on your phone of one of the songs before it was recorded that your fans can have access to. So it's like creating product from our brand and having access to us as artists and creating a monetary system that, you know, rewards the fan, you know, because they can also use those tokens as voting power. You know, what is the next single I'm going to release? Let your fans get involved. You know, they feel like they're part of the process. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's exciting because a lot of people are doing that not in a sophisticated way that you're describing, but they are having fans do some of the Patreon folks who help support, you know, say, these are some new originals. Which one should I release? That's very exciting.
Well, see, Patreon is kind of a begging thing, whereas, which I have a little bit of an issue with. But this system is more based on economic, it's kind of a symbiotic relationship between you and your fans where both of you have an economic interest in your success.
Yeah, that wasn't the best example of Patreon, but I was trying to think of something where I know people are doing that, but not in a very sophisticated and a sustainable way. But they are saying what track should I release next and that kind of thing. So,
yeah. In fact, I wrote a book on this whole thing where I took and I brought all of this technology together, and I said, look, this is how we can create a music industry that's apart from the main industry that we as independent artists can control. And we can introduce this to our fans and give them the opportunity to be at the ground floor of this new ecosystem. You know? And I think that is a really, how can I say it, possibility for the future of the music industry, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's a very positive direction that the industry could go in. And that would open up a new world of regulations. So they need to put in the, they'll probably have to put in a whole world of regulations, new regulations, just to protect, you know, because every time you have advancement, there's always those who want to take advantage of it the wrong way. So,
well, that's a great future, I can. I mean, they did it with streaming. I mean, we thought that, you know, you can't corrupt this. But they corrupted it. The thing with this decentralized world is that because it's decentralized, you know what I mean? Like cryptocurrency, you know, Bitcoin, you can't corrupt Bitcoin because nobody can own the system. The system is kind of autonomous. And it's the same way with this new technology. I mean, Web 3 is on its way. That's going to be the new internet, is Web 3. Okay. It's going to be blockchain-based. So creating an ecosystem utilizing those tools, I think, is a smart way for independent artists to move the industry as opposed to being dragged along by it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, what are some of the things that you're doing with content and, you know, like videos or whatever, and social media that's helping you kind of get the word out on this new release?
Well, like you said, I'm utilizing Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and doing behind the scenes look at some of the recording process, and then making people like homemade. That's kind of trendy now. So just making my own homemade video and becoming personable with people. You know, like, I'm a human being, and my hair is not done today. I don't have makeup on, and I just thought about this song. So just building that rapport and having conversations and using social media to do it. That's what I'm doing. So.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
Mercedes, I really appreciate you coming on the show and talking with me, and it's been a great conversation, and I'm going to give everyone out there an Indie Blues double shot from your release, and you guys are going to love this. You just may just want to turn it up loud. The hell with the neighbors. We're going to have some fun tonight.
Thank you so much. You're very articulate and an intelligent visionary. I mean, it was my pleasure.
trying to breathe again. Thank you. lady at the casino, lost all her money. She said, "Don't feel sorry. Don't feel sorry, honey. But if you want to do a lady a favor, here's what I want you to do. Just loan me $2 now, till the next time I see you. But these last $2, I'm not gonna lose. The other one for the jukebox. I gotta hear me some down home blues. Gotta hear me some blues. These last $2, I'm not gonna lose.
Not gonna lose.
These last $2,
you're
not gonna lose.
Not gonna lose.
One's going for my husband, huh? Other one for the jukebox. Gotta hear me some down home blues. Gotta hear me some blues. Gotta hear me some down home blues. Gotta hear me some blues. These last $2, I'm not gonna lose. These last $2, I'm not gonna lose. One's going for my bus fare, the other one for the car. Gotta hear me some.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, MakingAScene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.